are listening to the Eurofolk Radio Network at eurofolkradio.com. And now, it's the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show with your host, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.
Hello, everybody, and before I bring up today's guest, I have in my hand a CD, Gospel Refrain by Eric Carlstrom. Now, I received this about 3 weeks ago, and I already played a couple of songs from this on our shows together. I must say I've really been enjoying it. 16 tracks, really nice traditional music, very good to relax to. You'll get to hear one of the songs today, and we'll play a few more from the CD over our forthcoming shows together. So I now want to bring up the great Dr. Eric Carlstrom, good friend, great supporter of the show, always a pleasure to have him on. Eric, are you with me?
Yeah, hi Andy, good to be with you for our number three program on the phony war on terrorism.
Exactly. And before we jump in, this CD, folks, you go to ericcarlstrom.com, and that's Eric's music site, and you can get it in a variety of ways. I get MP3s. I like to have the physical disc, although I pulled it onto my computer and then my phone. It's just nice to have the, you know, the package. Let me read to you quickly from it. I hope you enjoy this collection of gospel songs. The songs really speak for themselves and convey essential and inspiring Christian messages. I hope these songs bring joy, peace, comfort and inspiration to you. As you listen, it may become obvious why this CD is called Gospel Refrain. In my opinion, at least, the choruses, refrains are probably the best, most distinctive part of the CD because they often achieve a choir-like fullness. Perhaps you will be inspired to add your voice to these choruses and thereby magnify the power of Gospel Refrain. Eric Carlstrom, July 2018. And I mean, I echo that. It's just great to put on, and it kind of, like any good music, good Christian music, and it'll take you away from the nightmare world that we're being forced to live in. A great pleasure to listen to. So that's ericcarlstrom.com. Can you run through your other websites, Eric, that of course I will be linking to in the post for this show?
Yeah, I have five websites altogether. EricCarlstrom.com features my music, which I've done since I was, 13 years old. I started playing guitar and singing. But I also have these other websites that are kind of more politically oriented. One's 911nwo.com. The material we're talking today is posted on there. That's my terrorism and war article that actually I put together class notes for this topic in my human ecology class when I was teaching back at California State University Stanislaus about the time of 9/11. And then I have naturalclimatechange.org, which, you know, is also a gigantic digital library of information, which is free to the public and educational. And again, I spent 30 years as a professor, so I guess I can make that claim. Growing out of 911nwo.com is gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com. Another one is sanluisvalleywaterwatch.com. And so there's five altogether. It keeps me busy in my retirement. I taught 30 years at university, and I've been retired now since 2011. In 2013, I realized I was a targeted individual. I don't define myself as a targeted individual, but obviously others do. They consider me some kind of a, potential terrorist threat or whatever it takes to get on one of these terrorism watch lists. And so I've been working very hard on that website. And of course, the whole gang stalking program, which I call Global Gestapo or GOG's New Gestapo, is terrorism against the domestic population. But yeah, we've talked about that before, and I hope we can talk about it again. But now I'd like to talk a little bit about, international terrorism as a form of warfare. We've talked about this now in two shows previously. And, the idea of a war on terrorism is actually pretty ludicrous because terrorism is a form of war. It's the use of violence or the threat of violence to subjugate domestic populations. Through fear and, through the terror. And it's a very, very grim subject. It's a part of, the bag of tricks that empire-type nations like the United States, et cetera, Well, you know, and others too, use against adversaries. And let me just start off with a again, I added this as a unit in my human ecology class, which is a geography class that looks at, you know, interaction between humans and their environment. And I decided this was an important subject, especially around 2011. So I added this unit, and I got a lot of quotes. Here's one by a Salvadoran, El Salvadoran campesino, meaning farmer, in April 1988, when the U.S. was supporting the death squads down there. He says, "By a miracle, I am able to tell you the story of my grand crime for which they threatened me with death. They took my son, who was 18 years old, shot him, peeled off his skin, and cut him into pieces. They hung him from a cross in a tree. They cut his testicles off and put them in his mouth. They did this to warn me because I was a celebrator of the word of God. That was my crime. We had to leave because they persecuted the whole land. Our crime was to be poor and ask for bread. Here, the laws only favor the rich. However, the great majority of people are poor. Those who have jobs are exploited daily in the factories and on the farms. Without land, we cannot plant. There is no work. This brings more hunger, more misery. We are without clothes, schools, or jobs, and so we demonstrate. But to speak of justice is to be called a communist. To ask for bread is subversive. It is a war of extermination. It is a crime to be a Christian and to demand justice." Okay, Salvadoran farmer in the 1980s. And I'll give you one more quote that's kind of from that time and place. This is a Reverend Santiago in El Salvador during the 80s. "People are not just killed by the death squads in El Salvador. By the way, these death squads are trained at the School of Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia, where the Latin American countries will send their police and military forces to be trained in these techniques of domestic terrorism. They are decapitated, and then their heads are placed on pikes and used to dot the landscape. Men are not just disemboweled by the Salvadorian Treasury Police. Their severed genitalia are stuffed in their mouths. Salvadorian women are not just raped by the National Guard. Their wombs are cut from their bodies and used to cover their faces. It is not enough to kill children. They are dragged over barbed wire until the flesh falls from their bones while parents are forced to watch." You know, when I was, Andy, when I know this is very grim and I apologize for it, but we have to look at this because this is what the United States and other, you know, major nations have been doing to terrorize, you know, third world countries and other nations, including now Syria, et cetera, for many generations. And we need to look at it as part of, you know, geopolitics, real politic. This is the way the world works. And this is our national policy. So basically what has happened, of course, is that the war on terrorism supplanted and replaced the war on communism, which, of course, was the organizing principle for the free world during the Cold War, you know, between the end of World War II and 1989. And then when the Soviet Union fell, and that was all orchestrated, as we know, then we needed to have a new boogeyman. And, you know, so now the powers that be can call anyone or any nation a terrorist nation. And they're the terrorists, they're the bad guys. And what we do is counterterrorism. Well, of course, terrorism and counterterrorism are the same thing. And so now in the United States, counterterrorism is a huge enterprise. The national security enterprise is actually engaged in terrorism against the domestic population, which is the gang stalking, what I call God's new Gestapo. So again, apologies for getting into such ugliness. When I was at California State University Stanislaus in the Central Valley, I saw a notice that at the nearby Modesto Junior College, there was going to be a talk by a Catholic priest named Roy Bourgeois, and he was going to talk about the School of Americas. And so I went up there and heard him and bought several of his DVD, or at the time it was videotapes, VCRs, and he's made some very good ones, which I have posted on my websites. Father Roy Bourgeois was a Vietnam veteran, and then he became a Catholic priest when he saw the horrors of Vietnam. And then he went to work in Bolivia, and, you know, he was a guy who wanted to, you know, help the world. And then he noticed the same kinds of terrorism being committed by the U.S. government in Bolivia that were committed in the Vietnam War. You know, for instance, Operation Phoenix was terrorism against the domestic population. And I can't even begin to describe the horrors of these things. You know, I mean, we gloss it over with words like, oh, it was peacekeeping operations. We're trying to win the hearts and minds of the people. So we're into this era of complete lies, Orwellian misuse of language. What we're talking about is the most atrocious kinds of murders, like ISIS has been doing in Syria, going against Christians. And of course, ISIS paid for by Israel and the United States, and trained and fed, and they are our proxy army there to create chaos. And this is the way it's done. And what do they do? Well, they take Christians and they crucify them, and they, you know, you've seen maybe some of the footage even, and the reporting on that. Well, we always say, well, we're after ISIS. We're not after ISIS. We created ISIS, just like we created the Mujahideen, which we can talk about a little bit later during the 80s, which includes, of course, Osama bin Laden, who was a CIA asset in the 80s. And just like we, you know, we are behind Al-Qaeda, which is, of course, means the base. And that was really a bunch of, you know, arms dealers and whatnot and thugs and criminals, international mafia types who were behind the Iran-Contra scandal, arms for drug sales in the 1980s. So this has a long, long history. You know, we can certainly trace this back. But of course, there's different viewpoints. I've given you the Campesino viewpoint and the Catholic priest. And now here's Fred Sherwood, who was a CIA pilot during the overthrow of the democratically elected Arbenz government in Guatemala in 1954, and president of the American Chamber of Commerce in Guatemala. Here's the statement he made in 1980 during the incredible death squads of Guatemala and El Salvador, which killed, you know, well over 500,000 people, mostly peasants, mostly Christians. He says, "Why should we be worried about the death squads? They're bumping off the commies, our enemies. I'd give them more power. Hell, I'd get some cartridges if I could, and everyone else would too. Why should we criticize them? The death squad, I'm for it. Shit, there's no question. We can't wait till Reagan gets in. We hope Carter falls in the ocean real quick. We all feel that he, Reagan, is our savior." Okay, this is obviously just before the election of 1980, between, you know, the right race between Carter and Reagan. Well, you know, they got Reagan, of course, and then we had 8 more years of Republican warmongering. And of course, Reagan himself was victim of assassination attempt in the first year. And George H.W. Bush was de facto president for the remainder of the 2 terms there. And of course, he had been the head of the CIA in 1976. So actually, for almost 12 years, we had George H.W. Bush, who was, you know, I mean, as a disastrous situation to have a head of a CIA as a president. But that's what we had. And here's a comment by Noam Chomsky, "What Uncle Sam Really Wants." A study by Lars Schultz, the leading academic specialist on human rights there, shows that, quote, U.S. aid has tended to flow disproportionately to Latin American governments, which torture their citizens, unquote. It has nothing to do with how much a country needs aid, only with its willingness to serve the interests of wealth and privilege. Broader studies by economist Edward Herman reveal a close correlation worldwide between torture and U.S. aid, and also provide the explanation. Both correlate independently with improving the climate for business operations. In comparison with that guiding moral principle, such matters as torture and butchery pale into insignificance. Okay, he's being a little facetious there. You know, I have to give you a little antidote. When I was teaching my human ecology class, I, you know, for about 10 years, I taught this topic included with the other topics. And one year I remember showing these videos about the School of America. And this one cute young lady, I mean, she was crying at the end of it. You know, it shattered her world to think that that this was going on. Because we live in such an insulated, antiseptic, almost false reality in America, especially in the Central Valley, you know, where we have shopping malls and agribusiness mostly. And I really remember how, you know, kind of really hurt she was, you know. I mean, it really, she was crying. And well, I guess I'm sorry about that, but the U.S. government has been support, and you know the U.S. government supposedly works for we the people, so don't we need to know about this? Don't we need to weigh in on this? But of course, our intelligence agencies, you know, they actually I'm sure sent some representatives to my class. I remember one time. A guy with a big pot belly sitting in one of those little school children chairs with the, you know, which you can write on. It's got the piece of wood out in front of it. He could barely fit in it. He had a big belly, like a lot of these monsters. And he just kind of broke into the class, decided he was going to sit in on it that particular day. I didn't even notice him until the class was over. And at which point he kind of looked at me and smiled and said, "Well, we really need this stuff, don't we? We really need this." Well, yeah, we really need to kill people all over the world so U.S. corporations can make a lot of money. I guess that's what's happening, you know. And now, of course, it's a little bit later, and now it's very obvious that Israel is the tail that's wagging the dog. Noam Chomsky would say that it was, you know, Israel was chosen as a regional influential, a proxy terrorist state of the United States back in the 70s under Nixon. But, and I, you know, it might have been, but remember in 1979, Benjamin Netanyahu organized the first International Conference on Terrorism, which outlined then the future narrative, substitute the word lie, what we're fighting, our common enemy now is going to be Islamic terrorism. And we're in the West, we're the good guys, and they are attacking us because they don't like our freedoms. I mean, this is so lame. If you know anything at all, this is, you know, these do one lie after another. So I'll stop rambling here if you want to throw something in, Andy.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I've heard before that George H.W. Bush was essentially a three-term president. The terms that he served mm-hmm. as actual president with Reagan out in the front man, and then the one term that he got for himself. The interesting thing with that, I don't know if you think it's an interesting parallel or not, but I feel a lot of this group that are now in control, they were kind of back in the mafia days. So when they came over in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and they were in all these mafia gangs and what have you, and the Italians were put out as the front men, but it was the enemy controlling things at the top. And they got their children, they made sure that they went to good schools, and they became the lawyers and what have you that we now have running the planet today. And rather than running the rackets on the streets, they're running the rackets from the boardrooms and things like that. Now, I read an interesting book recently, and it was about a guy called Vincent the Chin Gigante, who was Italian, and he was an actual mafia boss, supposedly, of one of the five families, the Vito Genovese family, and he was the actual would-be assassin of Frank Costello, which was one of the original ones going back to Lucky Luciano's time. But what he did was, when he finally got control of the family, according to the book, this was in 1981, but it wasn't revealed for getting on for two decades, because what he'd done is he put another guy called Fat Tony Salerno out there as the boss of the family, but he was the real boss of the family. So you had this fake boss that all the, you know, the FBI and what have you were monitoring, when the real guy behind the scenes was this Gigante guy. And it mirrors what Bush did with Reagan, and it also shows these sort of links that I think are prevalent between how these people came over and got involved in controlling organized crime to where they've ended up today. What are your thoughts on that, Eric?
Well, I think you're right. Meyer Lansky was the top dog in the mafia for years and years. And there was always and of course he's Jewish. And the Jewish mob, you know, with Bugsy Siegel and whatnot that established Las Vegas and whatnot. They were always, I think, ascendant. They were always above the level of of the Sicilian, you know, Italian mobsters. But again, there was the public perception that was offered, you know, through The Godfather and book and movie and other and by the media, that the, you know, the mob, the mafia was mostly Italian. But the real power above and beyond, I think, because of their control of finance and whatnot, and was Jewish. And of course, Meyer Lansky retired to Israel and has donated a lot of money there. So I think you can, you know, your point is well taken, because we can start to look at the United States now as completely controlled by this criminal syndicate. The United States itself is a criminal operation, because the syndicate which runs it is a criminal operation. And, you know, Catherine Austin Fitz, who was, she calls herself a kind of a black budget economist. She was the assistant secretary of HUD, the Housing and Urban Development, under George H.W. Bush, or Bush 1, back in the late 80s. So she really knows, you know, how to look through spreadsheets and follow the money. She now, in cooperation with a professor from Michigan State University, Mark Skidmore, and his graduate students, have identified over $50 trillion missing from the U.S. Treasury, and they're called undocumentable adjustments. So what she's saying is that this criminal syndicate is basically just stealing the money and writing it off as a debt. And of course, who owns the debt? Well, that would be all the American people. So our treasury is being looted on a level that, you know, most Americans couldn't even, you know, begin to imagine. I mean, how much is $50 trillion? Well, you know, I mean, that's a pretty big number there, you know. It's, you know, our national debt is something like $19 trillion, and we've just supposedly lost this $50 trillion, you know, in the last 5 or 10 years. Through this kind of graft and corruption. So, yeah, the United States, I think, has run, you know, the phony war on terrorism, 9/11, and this draconian police state which is being constructed around us and all through the world. This is all part and parcel of the same program of world domination, the full spectrum dominance, and you know, you can debate about whether, you know, Israel's in control or the United States government's in control. I think that all the evidence suggests that Israel is in control of the United States government, as well as, you know, the many of the other players here. But yeah, so your point about H.W. Bush, and of course, the Bushes are a third tier Illuminati family, according to, that's German Jewish. So they'd be crypto Jewish. They would be pretending to be Christian, but they came over right at the Revolutionary War, and have been in America for a long time, with, you know, and George H.W. Bush supposedly said himself to, hey, we got four generations of Bushes that have been profiteering from wars and creating the wars and, you know, been banking and working with the, you know, the top Rockefeller people. So what you really have is the Bush, Rockefeller, Harriman, Dulles faction, which has controlled much of the wars in the 20th century. And of course, people are now saying, oh, the Clintons, you know, they're so corrupt. Well, they're just a subsidiary family to the Bushes. And the Harrimans are second tier Illuminati, and the as well as the Rockefellers. And of course, the Rothschilds will be first tier. So, you know, yeah, you can look behind the scenes and see the influence of these extraordinarily rich, powerful families of the Illuminati, which in the American extension of which is the, you know, Yale Skull and Bones. And now we've had at least three generations of Bushes that are, you know, bonesmen. So, and that includes George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, and their father, Prescott Bush. Prescott Bush would have been part of, and his father-in-law, Walker, Herbert Walker, they're the ones that created Hitler and funded him and were trading with Hitler during World War II. Hitler couldn't have existed if he didn't have support from the American and British financial powers. They created Hitler to smash, to create World War II and also, of course, drive the Jews out of Europe and into Palestine. That was a big goal there. So anyway, yeah, but going back to terrorism, it's let's talk about Osama bin Laden, the guy that they have supposedly, you know, within 45 minutes of the towers coming down, we were seeing Osama bin Laden's face, you know, as the probable, the likely perpetrator. And here I'll just read from my notes. Osama bin Laden was one of about 100,000 extremist Muslim mercenaries that the CIA recruited for the jihad holy war that they, the CIA, helped foment against the Soviet Union between 1979 and 1989. So we had a proxy war in Afghanistan between the United States and the Soviet Union, using the Muslim extremists, the mercenaries, the Mujahideen, and the Taliban that the CIA actually trained and recruited at the schools that they set up, madrasas is what they call them. And jihad is a term that is a Muslim term meaning struggle, but it normally referred to kind of a spiritual struggle of an individual who's overcoming, you know, their own sinful nature or whatever. But now the CIA managed to turn this into a kind of a holy war against the Soviets. And, you know, the poor criminal element within the, you know, the Muslim community in many countries were attracted by the money, and they did come there and they did learn how to become terrorists. But it was the largest CIA operation in history at that time, well over $3 billion that the CIA spent to hand the Soviet Union their defeat through this proxy terrorist army. Okay, so Osama bin Laden was one of 50 sons of a Saudi rich construction guy named bin Laden, and he was a prize recruit. He'd been educated at American universities. He was a multimillionaire, willing to use his own money in the cause and to recruit other Muslims from numerous other countries. So he was our boy, just like Noriega was our boy and Saddam Hussein was our boy for a while. I mean, the CIA makes all these deals with these tin horn dictators. And then when the dictators get a little out of control, then of course they call them, you know, a new Hitler or whatever, you know, and then they go get him. So together, these Islamic mercenaries from throughout the Muslim world comprised the Mujahideen, means holy warriors, who eventually chased the Soviets out of Afghanistan, again with the assistance of about $3 billion CIA U.S. money, the largest covert operation ever at that time. Osama bin Laden and the other Mujahideen were certainly terrorists, but since they were fighting our enemies, the Soviets, our press and President Reagan called them freedom fighters. In 1985, Ronald Reagan welcomed a number of these quote-unquote freedom fighters to the White House, calling them on television the moral equivalents of America's founding fathers. So you see, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. It depends on your perspective. If they're fighting for your cause, then of course they're freedom fighters. If they're fighting against your cause, then obviously they're terrorists. So now that the Osama bin Laden was at least against the U.S. policies, then they used him then as the boogeyman. You know, and the whole thing is a big, it's just a huge lie. You know, it's just phenomenal. And again, the U.S. CIA trained the Mujahideen, they trained the Taliban. They've been manipulating these factions, these tribes in Afghanistan for decades now. And of course, Afghanistan is a prize geopolitically, both for the Soviet Union. You know, they want the resources, they want the access to the warm water port to the south. And of course, our geopoliticians like Zbigniew Brzezinski, you know, wanted to hand the Soviets a defeat, and they did. And Brzezinski said, well, we're going to give them the Soviets of Vietnam that will, you know, will break them and you know, economically. And that's exactly what happened. And he's quite proud of that, that our operations in Afghanistan during the 80s, in which about, a million people died, that's of no consequence to our geopolitical leaders. That is to say, mostly native Afghanis and Soviets died because we weren't really there. These were proxy wars. You know, that was a big victory in Washington. So, you know, the narratives that we get about what's going on are just bald-faced cover story lies. And I felt in my course it was kind of important to set the record straight. I don't know if my students appreciated that because, you know, sometimes having the wool taken off your your eyes is not a pleasant experience. But the Mujahideen, as it turned out, were both warriors and drug smugglers. And of course, now when the CIA, when the United States prevailed and then attacked after 9/11, you know, of course, Osama bin Laden wasn't there. But we went right into Afghanistan. The war plans were already drawn before the event of 9/11. And they, you know, they took over the oil fields and, most importantly, the poppy fields, because the Taliban under, you know, who were at the time, you know, opposing the Northern Alliance, which is another CIA creation. So we the CIA creates these factions and then they have a civil war. Oh, does that sound familiar? Like maybe Korea, Vietnam, many, many African countries. This is how it's done. The CIA is meddling and destabilizing countries all over the world in order to perpetuate the American empire, which is the Anglo-American empire, which is the Zionist Anglo-American empire, to make sure that the resources and the cheap labor are available to our corporations. So the national interest doesn't mean the interests of Americans. No, it means the interests of our corporations. And this is well known. You know, I had a friend who was in the State Department in the 70s under Nixon. She said everybody knew that. The national interest, the State Department, is our corporate interests, you know. And of course, national security, that doesn't have anything to do with the security of Americans. No, no, no. It has to do with the security of our rich, of our corporate elite. So, you know, again, you got to roll back, you got to rectify the language a little bit here. You know, we United States, and of course, it was Smedley Butler who saw this back in the 30s. This is the most highly decorated soldier in American history. And in 1933, he was a brigadier general in the Marine Corps. In 1933, he wrote, "War is a racket." And see if I can find that quote.
What we can do before give you time to find the quote, we can play the. Yeah. Let's play your song, "Let the Lower Light Be Burning." Fine. We're about half, just over halfway through, so it's a good opportunity. And I'll go and grab that book as well. I've got a couple of copies, I believe, here. So, folks, this is the first track on Gospel Refrain. It's called "Let the Lower Lights Be Burning," originally by Philip B. Bliss. It's a wonderful track. So I'm just going to mute us both and start it up for you right now. Here you go, folks.
Along the shore, So let the lower lights be burning, send a gleam across the wave. Some poor fainting, struggling seaman, you may rescue, you may save. Some poor sailor, tempest-tossed, trying now to make the harbor in the darkness, may be lost. So let the lower lights be burning, send a gleam across the wave. Some poor fainting, struggling seaman, you may rescue, you may save. So let the lower lights be burning, send the gleam across the wave. Struggling seaman, you may rescue, you may save.
There you go, folks. Let the lower lights be burning off Gospel Refrain. Wonderful. Eric, are you back with us?
Yeah, thanks, Andy. You know, I have to just say a word about that. You know, our country has fallen into such darkness. My grandfather was grew up in Sweden, and at the age of, I think, 15, times were tough, you know, back around the end of the 1800s, and he shipped out as a cabin boy and sailed around the world. When he got back to a port somewhere, he got a letter from his family saying that they'd moved to America, back into Iowa. So then he went to find his family, and at that point he went and got his, you know, finished his elementary school and his high school and his university and his seminary. So he's a very motivated guy. He became a Lutheran minister in Seattle and ministered to seamen, of course, the sailors, because he knew that life, you know, and he was very comfortable trying to help those people. He started a kind of a mission for the sailors so they'd have a place to stay. And it was called the Compass. And that place still exists. It's grown. It's kind of, now I think it's a low-cost housing facility, quite big. But the point is, I think he was a thousandfold producer, you know, that they talk about in the Bible, you know, because of his faith and because of his, you know, Christian worldview. Well, I mean, now we're dealing with you know, the opposite, the enemy here. We're talking about death and murder and torture, and we're talking about destruction of nations and human beings. You know, they say killing one person is a murder, and killing 100,000 is foreign policy. Well, to me, killing 100,000 people, you know, it doesn't matter if it's in Iraq or if it's in, you know, in Syria or where. I mean, it's you just made 100,000 murders. And that is official American policy. America has its military and you know, something like 126 or 130 countries around the world. And we've got our special forces doing unconventional warfare in over maybe 135 nations of the world. We're destabilizing. And the CIA, that's been their job all along, to destabilize nations all around the world to foment these conflicts. Well, you know, you're fluffing pillows the devil's pillows there, aren't you? I mean, how evil can you get? I mean, we spent $800 billion in America on quote-unquote the Department of Defense, which is really the Department of Death. And you can bet it's possessed by the enemy. You can bet that the people there are possessed. You know, people like Michael Aquino, Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino, who wrote the tract Mind Wars, which is being used in the targeting of individuals all over the world now, these psychological operations against the civilian population. He founded the Temple of Set, which is, you know, a satanic cult. And the CIA has been involved in many satanic cults, not only the CIA. MI6 founded Scientology, and then it's a joint British-American cult project of intelligence, which is satanic. You know, so we in this United States, we have to take responsibility for what our taxpayer dollars are doing. We have to know what's happening. That's the way I feel about it. But, you know, that not everyone feels that way. If you get, say, some of my professor friends who were, one I'm thinking of now specifically was an officer in the Office of Naval Intelligence. He would have been, basically a case officer spy like the CIA. You know, his line is, oh, the great thing about being an American, you don't have to worry about it. You know, some other expert's going to take care of the decisions. Well, that's horse pucky, you know, horse manure. You have to, the nation is, the Constitution says that we, the people, you know, the governments are created to serve our needs. And the only way that we can keep track of our government is if we keep track of our government. We keep an eye on it. It is our responsibility. And of course, we've lost control of the press now. What is it? Six Jewish corporations own 96% of the world's media. So we're propagandized on such a phenomenal level. The only then solution is to find alternative media, to dig into books yourself, and to take responsibility for what our nation is doing. And I have to read this, Andy. Please break in if you would like. But I was watching True News TV, a show last night covering the United Nations. And here's what Trump said, President Trump said about Iran. What's fascinating is that everything he accuses of Iran of doing is what we're doing and we have been doing for decades. So, you know, Americans better come to grips with the fact that our politicians lie almost at every turn. Here's what Trump said. Every solution to the humanitarian crisis in Syria, calls it a humanitarian crisis. Now, there's so much spin in this, it's ridiculous. I mean, the United States has been attacking Syria now for, well, this was since 2011. Israel has bombed it, 200 times in the last 5 years. Every solution to the humanitarian, and of course, the goal is to dismember Israel and carve it up like a turkey and give it to the, the big powers. And then Israel, of course, wants to move in to claim all of the territory in between the Nile and the Euphrates and Tigris, which they've been wanting to do since they were formed in 1948. It's called Eretz Israel or Greater Israel. And that is what the United States is doing by prosecuting all these wars in the Middle East. We're doing Israel's foreign policy for them. It doesn't help us particularly to be waging wars in Iraq and Libya and Syria and now almost in Iran. But anyway, I digress. Every solution to the humanitarian crisis in Syria, okay, there's a big lie right there, must also include a strategy to address the brutal regime that has fueled and financed it. Well, who are the brutal regimes that have fueled and financed it? It's the United States and Israel. But now he's saying it's Iran. The corrupt dictatorship in Iran, okay, the corrupt dictatorship in Iran has fueled and financed it, according to President Donald Trump, world-class storyteller. Iran's leaders sow chaos, death, and destruction. This is what America's leaders do. They do not respect the rights or borders of the sovereign rights or the sovereign rights of nations. The United States hasn't respected the sovereign rights of nations, you know, for over 100 years.
It may be worth jumping into Smedley Butler's book I've got here now, if you like, to flesh this out, to show how far back it goes, because I don't know if I've got the exact quote that you wanted. But
I've got the quote here. Let me read it for you. Here's what Smedley Butler said. You're right. It is a good time for it. This is Smedley, retired Brigadier General Smedley D. Butler, U.S. Marine Corps, America's most decorated soldier, from War is a Racket, and a speech he made in 1933. He said, I spent 33 years in the Marines, most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer for capitalism. Every war which Americans have fought or may fight in the future outside their own continental boundaries has been or will be a racket. A mean, cruel, yes, filthy racket. During our participation in the World War, our soldiers thought they were fighting to defend their homes, to make the world safe for democracy. We're fighting a war to end all wars. Okay, that's all the propaganda we get, you know, and of course, 18-year-old kids are very susceptible to that because they got a lot of energy. They want to see the world and they want to fight, you know. He says, rot, pure, unadulterated, sickening rot. War is largely a matter of money. Bankers lend the money to foreign countries, and when they cannot pay, the president sends the Marines to get it. Why don't those damned oil companies fly their own flags on their personal property? Maybe a flag with a gas pump on it. Well, I've got a little bit more here. Let's see if I can find it. He gives lots of this. I recommend this book to everybody. It's a very short book, very powerful. He gives facts about what's really how the racket of war works, how, you know, they've got their specialists in the defense. Well, they called it Department of War in those days. They've got their specialists who are good at creating and fomenting the war. And then they've got their propagandists to spin the whole thing.
I've got some interesting info from the edition I've got that I'll just share quickly, Eric.
Sure.
It says, War is a Racket is the title of two works, a speech, as you pointed out, and a 1935 short book by Major General Smedley D. Butler, a retired U.S. Marine Corps Major General and two-time Medal of Honor recipient. Based on his career military experience, Butler frankly discusses how business interests commercially benefit from warfare. After Butler retired from the Marine Corps, he made a nationwide tour in the early 1930s giving his speech, War is a Racket. The speech was so popular that he wrote a longer version published in 1935. A bit more about him. After 33 years in military service, during which he was 121 times under fire, twice wounded, and won more medals than any other soldier in American history. There you go.
Yeah, thanks. And I'll give you just a little bit more from the book. He says, I spent 33 years being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer for capitalism. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of Brown Brothers in 1909 to 1912. I helped make Mexico and especially Tampico safe for American oil interests in 1916. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for American sugar interests in 1916. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenue in. I helped in the rape of a half a dozen Central American republics for the benefit of Wall Street. In China in 1927, I helped see to it that Standard Oil went its way unmolested. I had a swell racket. I was rewarded with honors, medals, promotions. I might have given Al Capone a few hints. He's a big mafia guy in Chicago. The best he could do was operate a racket in three cities. The Marines operated on three continents. So what we're dealing here with is imperialism. We are dealing with an empire, and it's been the American Empire for well over 100 years, and we're treating these other countries as colonies. So supposedly in World War II, the colonial era came to a close, but the CIA was very, very busy right after World War II going around the world with their counterinsurgency operations, such as in Vietnam, to make sure that none of those countries actually could use their resources and their labor for their own benefit. Rather, it had to go to the imperial nations.
When did America enter the Second World War, Eric?
Well, I believe it was 1942, right after Pearl Harbor, December 7th.
Get this. I've just looked up.
Maybe it was 41. 41, December 7th, 1941. And then, 42 at first, yeah.
Well, Smedley Butler, of course, he gave the speech in 1933. He did the book in 1935. and he died on June the 21st, 1940, aged 58. Okay, and this is basically what it says on Wikipedia about his death. Upon his retirement, Butler bought a home in Newtown Square, Pennsylvania, where he lived with his wife. In June 1940, he checked himself into the hospital after becoming sick a few weeks earlier. His doctor described his illness as an incurable condition of the upper gastrointestinal tract that was probably cancer. His family remained by his side, even bringing his new car so that he could see it from the window. He never had a chance to drive it. On June the 21st, 1940, Smedley Butler died in the Naval Hospital in Philadelphia. Very convenient, just before America went into World War II, wouldn't you have said, Eric?
Very good insight. I didn't know that, Andy, but, you know, I
can
add
to
just
now. I just looked it up. I just had an idea. I thought, when did he die after writing that? I've never looked it up, so it's great. Not great for, obviously, what happened to Major General Smedley Butler, but to actually get the information out.
Yeah, and another part of the story here, which is actually well recorded, at about the middle of the 30s, right in the heart of the Depression, Smedley Butler, you know, was acknowledged as perhaps the biggest hero in the military. He was known for being, you know, on the side of the little guy, the soldier, you know, and he was asked by a team of fascist capitalists in America to lead a 500,000-man march on Washington to take it over, to do a fascist coup. Okay, so this would probably be, again, the Rockefeller, Dulles, Bush, Harriman faction, with other people acting in the front. But Smedley Butler was a good old-fashioned patriot. He knew that was, you know, the highest treason. So what he did is he met with the guys, he got the plan, and then he went right to Congress. And he said, okay, look at what these guys are trying to do. That was his, of course, that was, according to the law, that was his job, was to report that. And so they had an investigation. They showed that he was right. But, of course, no one was ever punished. So this was the first real big fascist coup attempt that I know of in America, a very dramatic one. And Smedley Butler was the central figure on that, too.
Yes, we've got about 5 minutes left, just to let you know.
Okay, well, let me just finish Trump's speech here. I think it's worth reading through. Okay, so according to Trump, Iran does not respect their neighbors or borders or the sovereign rights of nations. And I said, the United States has been invading countries covertly and overtly, you know, for hundreds of years. In fact, I can say the U.S. has fought 15 wars in 200 years. This is as of 2001, but has put its military in other countries over 200 times to bend the other countries to our will or its will, an average over once a year. Since World War II, the U.S. has been at war with and bombed China 1945, 46, 1950, 53, Korea 1950 to 53, Guatemala 54, 67 to 69, Indonesia 58, Cuba 59 to 60, Belgium, Congo 1964, Peru 1965, Laos 1964 to 73, Vietnam 61 to 73, Cambodia 69 to 70, Grenada 1983, Libya 1986, and of course again, into whatever 2007 or 8, El Salvador 1980s, Nicaragua 1980s, Panama 1989, Iraq 1991 to 99, Bosnia 1995, Sudan 1998, Yugoslavia 1999, and now Afghanistan 2001 and Iraq again in 2003. As noted, John Stockwell estimate, the highest CIA guy ever to go public, estimates that since World War II, CIA instigated wars have killed well over 6 million peasants mostly, including 2 million Vietnamese, 1 million Koreans, 1 million Indonesians, 1 million Cambodians, 1 million Laotians, 220,000 Angolans. He was the station chief in Angola, so he was operating there and fomenting those conflicts, and 22,000 in Nicaraguans. This is just a partial list, by the way. This is from Stockwell, the Praetorian Guard, the U.S. role in the New World Order, and the United States in search of enemies. And he calls this the American Holocaust. Well, so for Trump to make these accusations against Iran is the height of hypocrisy, folly, and deception. Okay, see, I'm back to Trump. Instead, Iran's leaders plunder the nation's resources to enrich themselves and to spread mayhem across the Middle East and far beyond. The Iranian people are rightly outraged, and that their leaders have embezzled billions of dollars from Iran's treasury, seized valuable portions of the economy, and looted the people's religious endowments. Yeah, and I mentioned Catherine Austin Fitz, the black budget economist, saying over $50 trillion has now been swiped from United States and now is on the ledgers as undocumentable. What was it? Undocumentable something or other. Undocumented. Anyway, all I'm kind of my mind right now is on this this reading, all to line their own pockets and send their proxies to wage wars. And who's sending the proxies? Well, ISIS, of course, funded and by Israel and the United States. Not good, says President Trump. Iran's neighbors have paid a heavy toll for the region's agenda of aggression and expansion. Well, who's doing the aggressing and expanding? Israel and the United States. And of course, the coalition forces of England and France, etc. That is, and Saudi Arabia. That is why so many countries in the Middle East supported my decision to withdraw the U.S. from the horrible 2015 Iran nuclear deal and reimpose nuclear sanctions. By the way, the bottom line is if you have nuclear weapons, nobody's going to wage war with you. If you don't, you're fair game. You're dead meat. So, you know, for Israel to be able to have 400 nuclear weapons at least, and their neighbors not to have any, well, that just it just to maintain that disparity just make sure ensures that that the Israel is going to remain the regional hegemon, which of course is the goal. So I guess we've just about come to the end there, Andy. But yeah, terrorism is just part of war. We do it. We're the world's greatest terrorist state, and Israel is right up there with us. It's a cooperative endeavor between the United States and Israel, and I think Israel controls the United States.
Thank you very much, Eric. Fantastic information as always. I look forward to recording a show with you in the near future. I want to thank everyone for listening. I will, of course, be back with you all tomorrow. And until then, folks, bye for now.
You have been listening to The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, a new show every day of the year on the Eurofolk Radio Network. If you'd like to support Andy's work, please go to his website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, where his book, The Synagogue of Satan, is available in an updated, expanded, and uncensored edition.